borrowing as America eases into the spring of 2015. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A little bit later today, we get an updated picture on consumer credit in America. That is, how much do Americans borrow, not counting mortgages? The number will almost certainly grow. The question is how much? Marketplace's Scott Tong is here now from our Washington Bureau. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, David.
So now that we're finally coming out of the winter of discontent economically, any signs that consumers are getting out there and borrowing more?
Borrowing more, yes, just perhaps not at the rate of late last year. In January, consumer debt rose about 4%, but that's compared to 5 or 6% last November and December. So could have been the winter, the long winter, as you say. And there are signs more growth in borrowing could be on the way. Surveys suggest consumers are more likely to ask for credit and that banks are more willing to say yes, David.
But I got to ask you, though, why does this matter? Is borrowing necessarily a good thing?
Well, it's an indicator of how confident consumers are in their ability to make money, to borrow it and spend it, and then to pay it back. And consumer spending, of course, is engine number one of the U.S. economy. Now, last year, this economy rebounded in the spring, and the question is whether we see a rerun in 2015.
But you want to see prudent borrowing, and I understand that car and truck loans are a big part of the growth in debt. Do all Americans have the same access to car loans?
Well, minorities may not. The Justice Department is said to be investigating car dealers and whether they jack up interest rates for blacks and Latinos, those who have the same credit risk as whites. There's some evidence hundreds of thousands of minority borrowers are actually paying higher rates. I should say this problem is a little bit hard to quantify.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong, thank you. Vice President Biden is speaking at a conference hosted by the Department of Housing and Urban Development today. Now, traditionally, HUD has partnered with private businesses and nonprofits to build housing for people without much money. As Marketplace's Adam Allington reports, the need for these kinds of public-private partnerships is on the rise, while funding for them is harder to come by.
When government partners with local organizations or businesses, those groups tend to know the needs of their communities better than bureaucrats in Washington, says Bruce Katz from the Brookings Institution. That means money is spent more efficiently.
You want to have flexibility in the system. Housing markets tend to differ dramatically from, let's say, a Denver to a Detroit or from a New York to a New Orleans.
The problem, Katz says, is federal funding for things like affordable housing is being cut back as an increasing share of the budget goes towards things like Medicaid and Social Security. Richard Barron is the CEO of McCormick Barron Salazar, an affordable housing contractor. He says this means many public-private partnerships have been given all the responsibility without any of the funding.
That money has just dwindled to a place where, you know, the city is just doesn't have the wherewithal to continue to help fund these projects to any great extent.
Barron says these partnerships are a good way to provide service to communities, but the government still needs to be the primary investor. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
The bread of affliction, the Old Testament calls it. An estimated 40% of domestic matzah, unleavened crackery bread central to the Jewish celebration of Passover, is produced by a single family-run business that's been operating out of New York's Lower East Side since practically the Exodus. But the company is moving out of New York this summer, as Caroline Losnick reports.
Inside the Streitz factory, you're almost instantly struck, in both senses of the word, by baskets of matzah flying through the air as they move from the oven to the packing floor.
And we bring the flour in the basement. We blow it up to the fifth floor. It goes down to the fourth and second floor to mixing rooms, where it goes down to the third and first floor to ovens. And then everything meets on the second floor to get packed. And then everything goes down the elevator to the shipping room to get shipped over to our warehouse.
That's Aaron Gross, a fifth-generation family member in the business. Gross and two cousins run the day-to-day operations. Streitz has been cranking out 1,800 pounds of the crispy cracker per hour in its Manhattan factory for 90 years. Streitz was state-of-the-art back in the 20s and 30s, but Gross says manufacturing in an antiquated factory is like trying to fight with one hand tied behind your back.
We know how to work in four tenement buildings. We know how to load on the street. We know how to do all this stuff. But the fact that our competitors don't have to do it puts us at an unfair disadvantage.
Despite the challenges, sales of Streitz unleavened bread have been anything but flat. The company earns over $20 million annually. Streitz has many long-term employees, including Rabbi Meir Kirshner.
and I am the head supervising rabbi here at Streitz for 8 years.
Kirshner makes sure that Streitz production meets strict kosher standards. Even though it's an emotional decision, he knows it's time to go.
We should have been out of this factory years ago.
When Streitz relocates, they'll be able to make about 3,000 pounds of matzah an hour, almost double what they do now, and they'll make bank. 7 years ago, they nearly sold the property for $25 million. What would Streitz founder Aaron Gross's great-great-grandfather Aaron Streitz say about the move?
He'd be proud of us for making this decision, and he would realize that it's necessary.
The new location will likely be in New York or New Jersey. The authenticity that comes from being an anchor of the Jewish Lower East Side is something Gross hopes to keep.
The Lower East Side will always be in our DNA.
One worry in relocating? Finding good New York City water, the not-so-secret ingredient that some say makes the matzah so superb. In New York, I'm Caroline Losnick for Marketplace.
And before we go, this news from Europe. Greece and its European partners are at loggerheads over the terms of Greece's debt. Germany is seen as taking a particularly tough line against easing those terms. Now, at the same time, Greek officials are raising the issue of World War II reparations, it believes may be owed by Germany. In remarks today, Greece's finance minister says his country has obtained, quote, stunning evidence to support its claims that Germany might owe it more than $300 billion for damage during the war to its private and public property. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.